"Love your body," the poster in the window of the body shop said simply. The picture showed an exuberant woman rising from her bathwater, her arms extended triumphantly above her head. But the body in the picture was abnormal for advertising. By American cultural standards, this person was fat. In Western culture, the body has been understood as the temple of the spirit. We're taught that it's half of who we are, but definitely not the better half. Our philosophical dualism teaches us to favor mind over matter. Because the body is flawed, impulsive, and erotic, it needs to be disciplined and controlled. If we love it, it's definitely a form of tough love. Advertising embodies many of these assumptions. Ads tend to teach us generally that we can't be somebody until we have the body, the model body that is displayed incessantly on TV and in magazines. For a man, the body is a hard body. It's tall and angular, broad at the shoulders and slim at the waist, and rippling with muscles. For a woman, the body is not angular, but curvaceous, with the dimensions sometimes specified, 36, 23, 36, for example, in a recent Wonder Bra ad. Because advertising educates us so well, we routinely judge people by their approximation of the ideal. We see a woman who matches the ideal and rank her, or at least her body, a 10. We see a comparably attractive man and know immediately that he's a hunk. Advertising educates us to evaluate our whole bodies, but it also teaches us to judge specific body parts. Ads especially influence women this way. Early on, American girls learn to worry about their hair, their eyes, their lips, their breasts, their hands, their hips, their butt, their thighs, and their nails. A woman learns that to look good, she has to look well, scrutinizing each of her body parts to see how it measures up to the standards of models who represent not the standard American body, but the imagination of advertisers. In this segmentation, the total person becomes less than the sum of her parts, because a whole person, confident in who she is, has fewer fears about what she looks like. In almost no case is fat a part of the ideal American body. Advertising involves us in a war between the body beautiful and the body bountiful, a ferocious fight against fat. The war metaphor is importantly influential, because it engages us in a battle against ourselves. We learn to see fat as the enemy, and we try to remove it or exercise it away. As Jane Caputi suggests in an article aptly entitled, "One Size Does Not Fit All," we also learn to see fat people as stupid, sick, self-indulgent, neurotic, lazy, sad, bad, and invariably ugly. That's why the Body Shop ad is so shocking and so beautiful. A fat woman is portrayed as personable, desirable, and lovable. Of course, in a commercial context, love means never having to say you're frugal. Love means a purchase, a present, a gift. In advertising, and in real life, American lovers love not just by kissing and caressing, not just by care and concern, but also by buying. Passionate lovers show their love with passion, but also with flowers or jewelry or chocolates. Choosy parents love their children by purchasing a particular brand of peanut butter or jeans or toys. We all express our love by buying greeting cards. Many of the things we buy each other are not just things. They are love commodified. So when the Body Shop tells us to love our body, they are hoping that we'll love it by pampering it with their products. The crack research team at the American Studies Museum has discovered that it is possible to love a body without buying anything. But if buying something helps us to see that beauty is not just singular but plural, and that fat is sometimes just in the eye of the fathead beholder, then maybe it's a price worth paying. From the American Studies Museum, this is Dr. America, building a body of knowledge by pumping irony.